And good Saturday afternoon to you. Welcome to Woods and Water, South Carolina. It's Labor Day weekend. Everybody needs a break. I'm actually taking one today. This is a recorded show. I don't know exactly what I'm going to be doing, but I'm going to be out doing something fun in the outdoors. I know I have a 40-something year stretch making opening day of dove season, so probably about the time this show wraps up, I'll be hitting a field somewhere. I don't think I'm going to go out there and sit in 90-degree weather unless the weather forecast holds true and it's cooler, maybe a little rain around Saturday today. I might go out there and sit all day, but I'm going to spend a little quality time with my family this weekend. I think my oldest daughter's coming home from college. My younger one wants to go burn some powder and support the U.S. economy on a dove field somewhere. So that's probably what I'll be doing this afternoon. And I hope you're doing something with your family too. I mean, I know football season is here and it's great if you get out there with your family and tailgate and all. It is really about spending time with those kids and making those memories. But this is the official kickoff weekend for my time of the year. Fall, with the opening of dove season, fishing just starts getting better and better the next few months. Then we have deer season open up the middle of this month. Archery season, muzzle loading comes in October 1st. I get to pull out my flintlock rifle and play Daniel Boone for a few days, or not play him, at least look like him a little bit. Then you got rifle season coming in. Thanksgiving ushers in duck season, along with all the food that comes with it. We've got a couple of pig pickings this fall. I mean, this is just the time of the year to be outside. And whether you hunt, whether you fish, whether you hike, I mean, this is prime hiking time as far as I'm concerned. Leaves are changing. Things are going to be cooler. You might not have to worry about snakes as much. Bears, well, you don't know what they're going to do. But this is the time to get outdoors. And I hope this weekend you start making those plans to spend some time outdoors in South Carolina. They have so much to offer across the state. And, you know, from hiking trails to hunting seasons to fishing, it's all there and it's all open for you to do. A lot of the stuff doesn't cost anything. Hiking doesn't cost you but a good pair of shoes, which you probably already got. Hunting licenses in this state are cheap compared to other states I've hunted in. And fishing, of course. Plenty of bank access. Go to the Department of Natural Resources website and they've got a listing of all the places you can go and bank fish. You don't even have to have a boat. Piers off the coast. It is just my favorite time of the year. And in connection with my favorite time of the year, we're going to kind of skip the calendar events. We have a full show today. We've got Joe Ellen Wilson from the Bonefish and Tarpon Trust is going to be here talking about actually a tarpon population here in South Carolina and some of the research that's going to be going on. Then we're going to talk to Brandon Cobb, who placed third in the FLW Cup, his second year on the tour, his first top 10, and it's at the FLW Forestwood Cup in Hot Springs, Arkansas. I was there, had a great time watching him fish, if you can believe that. Yes, it is fun to watch people fish. And then we're going to talk to Rod Goodall. Rod is the executive director of Riley's Catch. We talked to him. It's hard to believe it's been a year, but every year and up on Lake Wylie at Camp Arrowhead, I believe, or Camp Thunder Chief, Arrowhead, it's the YMCA camp up there. They have a youth weekend and where they have a fishing tournament. They have archery, paintball. I mean, it is just a weekend for you teenagers to get out outside, do a little fishing, meet some new friends in a very, very, very good environment. Almost a church service type environment, which they do have one on Sunday mornings. So it's a packed show. One of my favorite things to do this time of the year, and we usually do a family trip, is to go pick apples. And I missed doing this last weekend because it was such a busy show. So I don't want to miss it this weekend. And there are plenty of apple orchards. There's some in South Carolina, North Carolina. One of our favorites is Skytop. There's Purdue Fruit Farms. There's a couple of others York County has one. I know, I can't remember the name at the time. But anyway, Sky Top Orchard is probably one of our favorites. Now, you got to remember, you got to get there early because lots of people go to Sky Top. The first thing you do is go get apple cider donuts. That's the first thing you do before you ever talk about, because the line gets extremely long for those things the more the day goes up. So get yours early, get them hot. That's your breakfast right there. Then you can go pick apples. And their schedule, I'm looking at it right now, the galas, which are one of my favorites, are picking right now. They are picking Honeycrisps. Well, they don't have this filled in as much as I thought it would. Oh, well, let's flip over to Purdue Farms. They've got theirs is set up a little differently. They've got, Ozark Golds, Honeycrisps, Golden Delicious are open right now. They also have pears. And I know, Skytop has pears and some grapes and all. Purdue actually has a lot of pears. Bartlett's are open right now. Then they have grapes, muscadimes. Now, there's a good one. The muscadimes are just starting to come in. And one of my favorite things as a kid, my granddaddy had muscadime vines, and we would go. And, of course, you had wild ones, too. So we grew up. They also have, which are picking right now, are some peaches. Still got some laurels, flame princes, big reds. So I encourage you to get out. Spend this time with your family, Labor Day weekend. Yeah, football games, okay. But get out there. This is something fun. It's, hey, you're getting apples. You can come back and make apple pies. You can make apple cider. You can make anything out of it. And just eat them. I mean, apples are good just off their own. So I hope you'll get out and do something there with the family over the Labor Day weekend. The only other thing really on the calendar this week, DNR came out with a schedule of public meetings to discuss deer management legislation. This is tied back to Senate Bill 454. This is Senator Chip Campson's bill. It is a bill to establish a limit or a tag system for South Carolina deer hunters. It would be a four doe and a four buck tag system, so eight deer per person. It passed the Senate this past March. It got to the House, did not move from the House because of amendments, and pretty much ran out of time. But our state deer population has changed in recent years. These are the words of Charles Ruth, who I've talked to a couple of times about this. We're seeing an overall population decrease of about 35% in harvest. That's over about the past 10 years. And I know this is created a lot of controversy. A lot of people on one side and a lot of people on the other side seems like there's no middle ground, but they've established meetings across the state. And I want to encourage anybody who has any interest in deer hunting to attend one of these. They start September the 22nd in Florence at the PD Research and Education Center. The 24th of September, Lancaster, USC Lancaster. The 29th of September, North Augusta. October the 6th, Pendleton High School. October the 8th, Greenwood Piedmont Technical College in Greenwood. October the 13th, Orangeburg at the Orangeburg Calhoun Technical College. And October the 15th, Walterboro, Hampton Street Auditorium. And this is one of those, just like the boating safety public meetings they had this summer, this is your chance to find out more information. If you don't know about this, there's a lot of research that has gone into these proposed regulations. This is not just off the cuff. Hey, we want to limit everybody to exert our control over how you hunt. This is not their intention. Their intention is to make sure that our deer herd is viable down the road, and we have to start somewhere, and this is a starting point. So get out there and get to those meetings. Hang on through the break. We're going to be talking to Joe Ellen Wilson from the Bonefish and Tarpon Trust as soon as we come back. Welcome Welcome back to Woods and Water, South Carolina. Like I said, it's going to be a busy show, and we're going to jump right into it. Joe Ellen, it's hard to believe it's been almost a year.
Yeah, tell me about it.
We are thrilled to have with us Joe Ellen Wilson. She is the Bonefish and Tarpon Trust's. You are the tarpon biologist, juvenile tarpon biologist, correct?
That's right.
There we go. See, I remember some things. Last year, Joelle and I met, or actually I met some people from Bonefish and Tarpon Trust at ICAST last year, said they were coming to our state, and I said, well, you know, we do have somewhat of a tarpon fishery in late summer, and met up with Joelle at the Georgetown Tarpon Tournament last year. She took off, and boy, there's some big news on the tarpon front here in South Carolina.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, give us a recap. What did you do last year after the tarpon tournament up until your arrival here in the last day or so?
So last year at the Lowcountry Tarpon Tournament, we were talking to anglers, and they're mostly fishing for adults, you know, the big guys, 100 pounds plus, but they were telling us that there were juvenile tarpon there. So in and around Georgetown and also some in Charleston as well.
Okay.
So when we say juvenile, what we really mean is probably 30 inches and under.
Okay.
So those guys should be about 3 years old and under. So what we did is we actually, Bonefish and Tarpon Trust, raised the money to hire a field tech and also a research assistant from University of South Carolina's Bell Baruch Marine Lab, and we're going to do the first ever juvenile tarpon habitat study in South Carolina at the Tom Yawkey Wildlife Center.
Wow.
Which is also known as South Island.
South Island.
Local to Georgetown.
Yeah, that's right. Not much out on South Island, but, you know, hey, it is an island out there.
Oh, yeah. Well, a lot of tarpon, I guess.
Yeah. So we've got two people in South Carolina working now. I kind of figured out we had one, but now we've got two people here in South Carolina that can be working on this project.
Yes, sir. So they work under Dr. Matt Kimball, who works in the marine lab, but Trey Mace is our lead on the project, and he's a field technician. And then we've also got a research assistant for him, which is Eric Caffey. So part of what they'll be doing is tagging juvenile tarpon on South Island in the impoundment, but we're also installing these antenna arrays to track them. So these tags that we put in, they're really similar to microchips that you put in, you know, your pet, your dog. So they have a unique ID number for each fish. Well, the antenna arrays that we install, they call them trunks out there, but the water control structures.
Okay.
They work just like an automatic toll booth system.
Right.
So when any of these fish go near them or swim through them, it records the tag number, the date, and the time. And that'll do a couple things. So that'll allow us to know how these fish move. So when the doors to the trunks are open, we'll have an antenna on each side, and we can see how they come and go.
Okay.
We'll also be able to tell survival. So if we tag a fish and a couple months later, it pops back up again on those, you know, antenna array toll booth system,
right?
We'll know it's still alive, so that way we can tell. Really, the primary goal for this project on South Island is to quantify tarpon survival, and what that means is, can they live through the winter? Right now, we don't really know. We didn't think that they'd be able to withstand these cold temperatures, especially because it's such a prolonged period of time.
Right.
I mean, tarpon can handle the cold, no problem. It's just the duration of the cold that's the issue.
Right.
So if these fish go in these impoundments, you know, as larvae and then as juveniles in their first winter, they're getting wiped out. And there's really not a lot of sense in putting time and effort into looking at them. It's
correct.
What we call an ecological sink.
Right.
However, if they are living, and the way that we're managing now for waterfowl is to drain the impoundments and burn, that's not really conducive, you know, to tarpon. We want these guys to grow up and contribute to the fishery.
Of course,
so
of course.
So we'll have to figure out a way. That'll be step two, phase two.
Wow.
Figuring out how waterfowl can coexist with juvenile tarpon.
Now, the burning and all takes place, that would be springtime, correct?
Yes, sir.
Which could work. It could work. Do you think they're surviving? What's your gut tell you on this?
I don't know. I mean, in the beginning, when people told me there were juvenile tarpon in South Carolina, I thought they were crazy.
Right.
But they were also telling me the size they were. So I'm down from the Gulf Coast of Florida, and the fish that we see down there are coming in April. So So the ones that we see in August, September are still pretty small. I mean, they're still in that 5-inch, 6-inch range.
Okay.
Whereas you guys get seen a crop of later fish.
Right.
And so those fish in the impoundment sometimes in September, October can be 9, 10 inches. So that either means that they're growing really, really fast, which, hey, that's the advantage. So that points to all signs that they are surviving. Or on the other hand, they could be a year old, which who knows what happened in that past year in the meantime. But that does mean that they're surviving. So a year ago, I would have said no. Today, I say
maybe.
Not only possible, but I'm leaning toward probable. Yeah.
Really? Let me ask you this. How you know, most people when they hear tarpon, they think Bahamas, Keys, you know, the tropics. How far up the east coast of Florida do you know that tarpon will hang through the winter?
Yeah, people don't realize that. They go up to the Chesapeake Bay, all the way up to Maryland. I mean, we put satellite tags in the big fish, and they'll travel from the Keys all the way up the east coast. It's amazing how far these fish can go. They'll circle around inside the Gulf, so you'll find them in Louisiana and the mouth of the Mississippi.
Right.
Obviously, you'll find them in South Carolina and stuff. So they're able to move. They like certain temperatures, probably mid-70 degrees Fahrenheit.
Okay.
They like to follow that. They tend to follow bait fish, mid-Hayden, things
sure.
like that, mullet runs around here.
Right.
But another component to this study is we're actually going to take some juvenile tarpon and put them in the laboratory. What we can do there is put them in tanks.
Right.
So we can manipulate the temperature. So that's really going to give us a lot more information. Here's why. What we can do is we can slowly manipulate the temperature. So, you know, a degree Celsius at a time.
Sure.
So we can tell thresholds of tarpon, how cold can they take it, and also for how long. In the field, we got to deal with what you know, Mother Nature
well,
gives
Mother
us.
Mother Nature so gives you, yes. Yes.
There. So if we have, you know, a really crazy winter, a crazy cold winter, and it wipes out all the fish, who knows how accurate that is. But that way, if we're doing these lab experiments, that'll really give us some information of what these tarpon can take as far as cold weather.
The tanks y'all are using, those will be the ones in Charleston?
These ones will be at the Bell Baruch Lab. Most people around here know it as Hob Call Barony.
Right.
In Georgetown.
Okay, okay, because I believe the DNR have their redfish tanks there in Charleston. So it'd be a different,
oh, perfect.
Different set of tanks than what I'm, and they also have the tanks down at Waddell.
Right.
Wow. So you're excited. I mean, you're here in the state. You just got through telling me that y'all have been covered up with rain this whole summer, and wouldn't you know it, you come and Charleston floods.
For real. I mean, it was amazing coming into the airport and looking at all that rain. And they're talking about us having Hurricane Erica down there.
Yeah.
I'm trying to get out, fly out before that. And sure enough, it's raining up here.
Yeah, you could tarpon fish off Meeting Street yesterday.
Yeah, exactly.
So how long is this research going to go on, Joelle?
So this will actually go on for a year. And Trey and Eric will be – so we'll put the antennas in – we're actually working on that today and tomorrow.
Okay.
And we'll finish that up in the next couple weeks, putting all those antennas in and really just set the sights on tagging. So these guys will be tagging as long as they can, pretty much. I mean, the total study goes for 1 year. So we'll say September 1st through the end of August next year.
Okay.
So what we're going to do is tag as many fish as we can now, let the winter come, tag them then if we can, and then – once April comes, it starts to warm up, you get spring, then we'll open up those impoundments and see what fish swim out or if any fish swim out.
Okay.
So it's really the easiest way to do it is
sure.
tag as many fish as you can to get a more accurate survival estimate.
How deep are those impoundments in through the wintertime?
So we're actually going to do three different manipulations of the impoundment. There's so many out there, and they're so different. I mean, you look at South Island on a map, and it just looks, you know, like a checkerboard.
Right.
I think they'd all be the same.
Right.
But really, they kind of have their own personalities. So what we're going to do is we'll do six different impoundments, but we'll double them up. We're only doing three different treatments, so that way we can have a little bit of a consistency there. So the first one, they'll manage it just how they typically manage it on South Island. They have times that they close the doors on those fish. And So they'll just keep those current, and that'll be our control. Another thing that we're going to do is leave the door open on two of the impoundments. So this will be more like a natural system with the flow that comes in and out.
Okay.
This will have to do with our deeper impoundments.
Okay.
Those impoundments now were built, you know, for rice fields,
right.
So they're a little bit higher than water level.
Okay.
So if we just leave the doors open on certain impoundments, they'll just drain out the very first get-go, the very first tide,
right.
And then they'll stay dry. So we really got to be careful about our impoundment selection. And finally, what we think is going to be the most beneficial for tarpon is to close the door, and then we're going to pump in water from other impoundments and make it as deep as possible. Now, these ones have kind of a perimeter trough around the edge.
Right, they do.
So we're thinking those could even get up to 8 feet, whereas in the middle they might be about 3 or 4 feet deep. The deeper the water, it provides a much better refuge for temperature.
Sure.
If you have deeper water, it takes longer, you know, for the air
right.
to change the temperature on it. So that'll really give them a better advantage. Also, as far as birds go, they got a little bit harder time getting in that deeper water at tarpon versus the shallower water when you have wading birds.
Sounds exciting.
Oh, yeah.
I wish. I'm not going to make it down to help you and watch you do the antenna, but are you going to be back and forth a little bit, or is this your only trip to the state?
Well, I have a feeling I'm going to try to get back up here. I just can't stay away. We'll probably – now, these antennas are the most finicky scientific tool that I think they have on the market right now.
Okay.
So I may use that as an excuse to come up because I really want to get some sampling in and see
sure.
what we're catching and what we can tag. Also, it's really important to see what else is in there. What else could be eating the tarpon? You know, if we trap the fish in there.
Right.
What else is eating them and what do they have available to eat?
Sure.
So although it's not strictly part of the study, it's still stuff that comes into play.
Cool. Well, if you get back up this way, you be sure to let me know.
Yes, sir.
Now, okay, Bonefish and Tarpon Tusk, tell people where they can go to find out more about your mission and how they can actually contribute and help the research right here in South Carolina.
Yeah, if you go to btt.org, you can actually, first and foremost, you can become a member. I mean, they've got some really great gear specials right now.
Okay.
I think at the $25 level, you get this BTT trucker hat, and I kid you not, I'm wearing it right now. I mean, I just don't take it off ever.
Okay.
Works just like Ducks Unlimited. It's an annual membership, so
okay.
each time you re-up, you get a new shirt, things like that. Also, if you go to our website, you can look at our research project. We have a blog with updates
okay.
and pictures of what's going on. And then also in
quickly,
the area...
Quickly, I'm running out of time.
All right, btt.org.
Okay. Thanks, Joellen.
Thank you.
All right, bye-bye. Interesting stuff. Interesting stuff. Welcome back to Woods and Water, South Carolina. I'm going to have to talk to the program engineer. That music right there should have been on front of the Bonefish and Tarpon Trust segment.
I didn't hear any music. It never played on my phone.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Brandon. We'll have to I'll just send you a link that'll take you to all my bumper music. How's that? Well, welcome back to Woods and Water. We are privileged to have Brandon Cobb, Greenwood, South Carolina's own professional bass fisherman, who, man, you showed up at the FLW Cup couple weeks ago, didn't you?
It was a great tournament. I definitely, for my first trip to the Cup, I definitely feel like I made some kind of impact anyway, made a few waves.
Now, let's give people a little bit of background on you. You were a pretty recent graduate of Clemson University.
I was. I graduated in December of 12, I believe.
Okay. And you were if I got this right, you were a founding member of the Clemson bass fishing team?
I did. I definitely helped found it. I didn't do it all myself. I can't take full credit.
Sure.
But definitely a group of us that got it going and kind of got the beginning stages of the club it is today. They've done great work since I left, and they're getting bigger and bigger.
Just as a side note, where do you see the collegiate, and for that matter, the high school fishing clubs, where do you see them going in the next 10 years?
That's honestly hard to say, because when I was in college, I mean, there was collegiate fishing, but it didn't seem, I mean, it was just kind of like another intramural type sport,
right,
at Clemson. I didn't really see it being as big as it is now. And now, I mean, just the opportunities for college anglers is so huge. I've tried to, everybody I talk to is still in college. They talk about fishing, like, at different levels, like after college and everything. I try to emphasize how important the college fishing is, because you can actually leave college with great business relationships with so many companies straight from college, and it kind of jumpstarts you for a career in fishing after college.
And how did you decide to go fishing after college?
Well, I actually started fishing VFLs, which is like the weekend version of FLW, when I was 16. That's the first year you can fish. And I started fishing then as a boater when I was 16, and just pretty much kept doing it until all the way through college, and did well at the BFL level and weekend level, and just wanted to move up a little bit.
BFLs, they're pretty easy to get in to for people that want to fish them?
Yeah, BFLs are awesome for, like, the introductory type level. I mean, there's the competition in them. I mean, they're very hard tournaments to win. I think I fished like 60 of them, and the competition in them is the best local anglers around. But they have a co-angler draw format, just like the FLW does. So
okay,
even if you don't have a boat, you can sign up as a co-angler and be paired with a local boater around here, and they're great tournaments. Great tournaments to get started in.
And you just did that until you decided to go pro last year?
Basically, I fished BFLs until all the way through college, everything, and went to the regionals. And that's the awesome thing about BFLs. They give you a chance to see other lakes, because you fish all the regular season of BFLs, and then you make the regional.
Okay.
And you go to the regional, and the regional is pretty difficult to make, but you get to travel to a lake that's outside your home range for
okay,
the regional. And the top six in the regional actually make the All-American.
Okay.
And the All-American is very hard to make. And I made the All-American in 2013.
Okay.
And then if you win the All-American, you're on the tour. You can fish the tour like you're guaranteed in. But I didn't win the All-American, but I definitely made the All-American. That was one of the, aside from the Cup, that was the best experience ever. And it's awesome for, the BFL gives you a chance to get to that All-American.
Sure.
It's a long road, but it's definitely a chance to get to it.
It's doable.
It's doable.
It's doable.
It took me a long time to do it, but it was an awesome experience.
Well, I mean, you spent 1 year on the tour, and then the second year you qualified, and I apologize with everything going on with Anthony possibly being a repeat champion the first time, and with Geddes and Patrick making it from USC. You know, I just didn't know you were there until I saw the list of the 50 anglers, and I was like, we got a guy from Greenwood fishing the Cup? And then, of course, Geddes was riding up with you, and he said, hey, you need to talk to Brandon Cobb. So I'm ashamed to say that I didn't know you were on the radar until my good friend Geddes put you on the phone with me the other week.
That's fine. I'm used to it. And everybody jokes with me, because somehow I stay just under the radar all year, and about everything I ever fish, I'll be right there at the top end of the pack, but I don't win much. I'm just very consistent, so I kind of tend to stay under the radar.
And consistency is what it takes when it boils down to it.
That's right. It's consistency, definitely. It may not take longer to make a name for yourself, but it definitely takes it to keep going.
Well, I think you're on the radar after your finish a couple weeks ago. But you know, I talked to you right after the Cup, and you said, man, my phone's going off like nobody's business. I've had so many voicemails and emails. Has that kind of settled down a little bit, or are you still just wide open?
It's finally settling down a little bit. I think the last day of the tournament, after weigh-in, I left my phone in the truck so it wouldn't be buzzing while I was on stage.
Sure.
And I think I had 71 text messages when I got back to the truck. So I appreciate everybody's support, but it was amazing to know that many people were watching.
Yeah, there were a lot of people watching that tournament.
There was. The crowd was great.
Ouachita, give me just a real quick, does it compare to anything here in South Carolina?
It actually does. I, the the lower end of the lake, which is where I ended up spending most of my time, actually, to a T, almost looked like the lower end of Clark's Hill, aside from being a little steeper. Clark's Hill's a little flatter of a
right,
lake.
Right.
But it has, the grass is actually what reminded me of Clark's Hill. It has it's like a type of hydrilla grass, but it doesn't look exactly like the hydrilla that used to be in Murray, for people who remember
fishing
Murray 10 years ago.
Sure.
But it's kind of the same thing as Clark's Hill, kind of a stringy type, kind of odd looking hydrilla, and that's actually where I ended up targeting because I'm used to fishing on Clark's Hill.
Right.
And the timber was similar like Lake Russell here, but
okay.
It was the lake's a little older lake, so the timber on Russell has a bunch of limbs on the trees,
sure,
and the trees still look like trees.
Right. Yeah.
Out there, it was just poles.
It looked like a stick field.
It did. It was a stick field, and it was a pain to fish through. I know you watched me some, and I was bouncing off trees left and right.
I did.
Having trouble staying in the boat half the time.
And trying to get pictures of you, because, you know, I had to manual focus past all the sticks between you and I. So it was a challenge to get a good picture of you.
Those trees made everything a challenge.
They did. How did you catch those fish?
Pretty much every fish I weighed in were on one of three baits.
Okay.
And that was either a Zoom horny toad, which I was rigging two ways, either just with a hook or putting the horny toad on a buzz bait.
Okay.
And then also a Zoom old monster Texas rig. I would flip that to some isolated wood when I was fishing in the back of a creek. And then also I caught a good many fish on a Lucky Craft gunfish.
Okay.
And the gunfish, I would throw it when I was away from the grass, and because you couldn't throw it around the grass very effectively because it would get hung up in it. But I would throw it when it was kind of open water.
Okay.
And that was pretty much all. I mean, that was the only three baits. I think almost every fish I weighed in all week came on those three baits.
Sunday at the Cup, what was it like sitting up there with those nine other guys knowing this is the biggest stage I've ever been on?
That was kind of an unreal experience. I just remember sitting in the boat, waiting to weigh, and looking around like, holy cow, I didn't ever think I'd be up here, you know? It didn't really sink in until I was sitting there in that chair. And actually, I didn't have quite the nerves that I expected to. I mean, I wasn't too nervous up there. The whole big stage and everything doesn't bother me too bad, but I think it took some of the nerves off knowing how much of a deficit I had to make up. Which,
right.
I mean, obviously, you want to win, but I knew at that point, I was like, really, it's a long shot to win after the third day I had. I kind of struggled the third day, so. That definitely took off some of the pressure a little bit.
Yeah, and then you're just having fun.
That's right, and I did, and that was what I was telling everybody when I got back. Oddly, it was that tournament, I never really let the pressure and just the magnitude of the tournament really get to me. I mean, I fished. I never felt that much pressure while I was fishing. I was just fishing like any other tournament. That's really how you do the best. If you let the tournaments get into your head, then you don't do quite as well. Because last year on the tour, my first year on the tour, first time fishing against, I mean, Larry Nixon, Jay Ellis, Cody Meyer. I mean, some of the best fishermen in the world. That
sure.
was my first year last year. And I think I let that get in my head a little bit.
Okay.
And the main thing is, I mean, it's just any other tournament. You got to remember, you're fishing against the fish. I mean, you just got to beat the fish to work out of everybody. Everybody else is trying to beat them too, but you just got to beat them to work.
That is one thing I noticed about you the whole tournament time is that you just seem relaxed yourself. You know, that last morning you were just standing in front of the boat, just kind of, oh, you know, okay, it's good. It's another morning. So it showed you were just really relaxed and having fun.
Mm-hmm. And that's it. And if you're nervous and build it up to something, I mean, it was a huge tournament, but you build it up in your head, the bigger than it is, it just doesn't, it'll mess you up mentally and it makes it hard to fish.
All right. You told me about to come to the end of the segment. You told me about a giveaway you're doing. That's kind of really cool. Tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah. Anybody that watched the live weigh-in probably heard me talk about an app that's new for iPhone and Android this year. It's called Fat Sack Outdoors. You can search it on your app store or the media store on the Android. And it's Fat Sack Outdoors. The creator is Nick Rubio. And okay. we're doing a giveaway on the app with the actual exact gunfish that I threw for the tournament and caught some of my fish on. The Lucky Craft gunfish that I was using, I'm in giveaway on this app. And
okay.
the best way to, I'll put a video on the Fat Sack Outdoors Facebook page. If you
okay.
check that Facebook page out, it'll give a little more details how to get into the drawing part.
Well, what do you see going down the road?
I definitely next year I'll be fishing the tour again, and probably as well as the Bassmaster Southern Opens and possibly okay. the Northern Opens, depending on schedule.
Well, very cool. That means I at least get to see you fish the FLW here on Lake Hartwell.
That's right. I'll definitely be there on Hartwell, and hopefully I do a little better than I did last time there. I had a tough tournament last time on Hartwell. I think I let the home field advantage thing kind of get in my head and mess me up a little bit. So next time I go into it with an open mind and hopefully I'll do a little better.
Very good. Well, Brandon, I appreciate you coming on. Great, great, great finish there at the Cup, and I look forward to seeing you on that stage a lot more.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate the support, and I'll talk to you soon.
Good enough, Brandon. Take care.
Thank you.
Hang on, we got Rod Goodell with Riley's Catch on the way. Welcome back to Woods and Water, South Carolina. Told you it's going to be a busy show. Tarpon, bass fishing. Now probably one of the things that's closest to the heart of this show is getting kids involved in the outdoors. And Riley's Cup is one of those stories that if you haven't heard about it, you need to do a little research. Riley's Catch is the website. And I got Rod Goodall. Rod, it's hard to believe it's been a year. I've already said that once this show, but it is. It's been a year since we talked.
I know. It really is amazing how fast it goes. It's been an incredible year, though. So hopefully that's been the same in your camp. And it's like you say, it's near and dear to our heart, too, getting these kids outdoors. And, man, we're excited this year for what's in store for these students coming from all over the country this year. So pretty excited.
Yeah, it's been a good year over here. You know, you and I got to get together on the backside of this thing and go to the wagon wheel again.
Yes, sir. That ranks as one of my all-time favorite restaurants. But I thank you for that introduction.
Oh, you're welcome. It's been a busy year, I guess, on both our ends, and just hadn't had time to make that. But you know, I'm going to be in at the farm in Chester there a few times this fall. Maybe we can find time to go eat some lunch together.
That sounds great.
Well, you got your big thing, your second annual Life of Impact Leadership Experience is October 2nd through the 4th. So you got kids come from all over the states, huh?
Yeah, it's really been exploding. We actually have 5 students from a bass fishing team in Illinois flying down to attend this event. And so really, as you look at it, it's a BASS High School Nation sanctioned tournament for South Carolina and North Carolina. So we'll have kids competing, you know, in both states for the tournament trail through BASS High School.
Okay.
But then it's also an open tournament for kids that have never, you know, experienced a fishing tournament. And what we've done is we've created this really unique experience where we have collegiate anglers, and right now we've got some of the best schools in the country bringing boats. So if you hear University of South Carolina,
sure.
North Carolina State, East Carolina, Wake Forest, UNCC. You know these kids. There's quite a few national championships.
I was just fixing to say that's a laundry list you might see on any FLW BASS collegiate stage.
Yeah, so you think of that for a weekend for a student to come out and experience a bass fishing tournament and then have a mentor from one of these colleges to be their captain. Just to give you a short little story from last year, we had a student from Chapel Hill come down, attend the weekend event, fishing his very first tournament, and he was blown away. He went back to his school, got 6 of his buddies, they got a teacher sponsor, and they started their own club. And that is the essence of what we're doing here, is really just trying to get these kids outside, see how much fun they can have. And so that Riley's Cup, you know, component really is exciting. So,
if somebody's listening and wanted to be a boat captain, what do they need to do?
Yeah, if they go to, you can go to Riley's Catch, or you can go to the lifeofimpact.me website, and we have a link there that you can sign up as a boat captain.
Okay.
And you just follow the link, and it'll walk you right through it. So it's an online registration form. Pretty simple.
Very cool. But it's not just about a fishing tournament.
No.
This is a lot more than this is. I mean, that's where it started, but it's a lot more than that. This whole weekend is, it's centered around that fishing tournament, but it's so much more. Tell us what the more is.
Yeah. So we're so passionate about this next generation and the leadership that they're going to bring. And so one of the things when you look at some of the great leaders, service is always a component of that. So one of the avenues that we've looked at is weaving in a leadership experience throughout the entire weekend. So we're going to have located on Camp Thunderbird, the YMCA Camp Thunderbird, we're going to have approximately 300 students coming in this year to attend this event for the complete weekend. The first thing they do when they walk into this camp is we're going to have a service project. We're going to package 50,000 meals.
Wow.
We've partnered with Servants with a Heart. And so these students are going to come together, and they're going to crank out this, in an hour and a half, 50,000 packaged meals, box them up, and these are going to get shipped around Charlotte and then mainly to Nicaragua to feed, kids that are malnourished. And so we're super excited to kick off the weekend with that. And then Saturday, we have obviously the big tournament.
Sure.
And that, but then we also have just a whole experience for students with high energy outdoor adventures, zip lining, archery, BB gun riflery, all those kind of things, canoeing, kayaking, all those sports tied in to team building exercises. So these students, are going to have this amazing experience, then come back for this huge weigh-in in the afternoon, an awesome gospel presentation in the evening, and then this year, the audacious thing that the students have come up with, so this is really a student-driven event,
sure,
is the largest glow-in-the-dark slip and slide in the Carolinas. So we're going to be bringing everything we have to this. It's going to be so much fun. And the kids are really, really, really talking about it. Have some neat personalities coming this year again. Britt Myers, Elite Series Professional, is going to come in and
sure.
share with the students his journey. Gene Jensen, the Fluke Master
yeah.
of YouTube.
Yep.
He's coming up. So it's going to be really, really an awesome opportunity. And, for us, it's so much more, like you said, than just a fishing tournament. One of the things as students look at this event, the front end cost is $175 a student. But we've been blessed with some amazing sponsors through Scott Clark Toyota and Clifton Larson Allen, and we do not want money to be an issue for any student that wants to attend this event.
Okay.
So we have a financial aid button. They can click on the link at Life of Impact and just say, I can afford to pay, $50 or $100,
sure.
or I can't afford anything. And my brother and sister, we want to come to this event. Well, it's available now thanks to those sponsors. So we're super excited to just bring these kids together at Camp Thunderbird. It's a pretty magical place, and really really pour into them for the weekend and watch as they make a life of impact. To make 50,000 meals and to be part of that in your hands
yeah.
and you're really just pouring into the next generation. So it's exciting.
And to some kids, a service project that will be new. That will be new to them. They've never done that before.
Yep. That's right. You got it.
And I'm amazed
with
my kids watching them do that for Christmas Child and some of their summertime mission work. You do see a change in those kids. It takes the attention off of me and puts it on to somebody else who's less fortunate than me or it makes me more thankful for what I have. I've seen that in my own kids.
I couldn't have said it better. And that's really the heart of a fisherman, and it's the heart of an outdoorsman and a sportsman. When you think about that, the young men and women in this industry I've found, and you've seen the same thing, are just so generous, so
yep.
caring. That's why I'm so drawn to it.
Yep.
Because I think there are so many teachable moments within that that just it's unbelievable.
Yep. Okay, website lifeofimpact.me.
Yep.
And there's financial aid available. It kind of gives you a little rundown of what you can do. Overnight accommodations there, meals provided, all the adventures you have. You got the fishing tournament. Gosh.
Yeah.
It's going to be fun.
Oh, it's going to be over the top fun.
Well, I don't know. I will try to make it up there at least for something this time around. I didn't get to last time. I'll be in touch with you. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah.
And if I can ever do anything for you, just let me know.
Thank you so much, Roger. Love your show and love your support. And hopefully we can connect soon at the Wagon Wheel, and we'll
fried squash.
Dial some things in.
Fried squash.
That's right.
All right, Rod, you take care of yourself. And listen, thanks for what you do through Riley's Cup and the fishing tournament the weekend over there at Camp Thunder.
All right. Thank you, sir.
All righty. Well, kids, if you want something to do the first weekend in October, that's where you need to be. Fishing tournament, archery, zip line. You know, they got a video out there that kind of gives you the upfront fun. But, you know, grab a friend. If you're afraid to go by yourself, get a friend. Go. You know, you're only young once. You can only take advantage of these things for a few years. And then you're into life. So I encourage you to, and parents, you know, if you've got a kid that you think would benefit from this or would have a good time, check it out. You know, sometimes you kind of have to get behind them and push them a little bit. And then after they take that step with your help, you know, then you can just sit back and watch the results, and it's amazing to see. Wow, it's a busy show. It's a good show. I love shows where I have good guests like I've had today, and thanks for Joel and Wilson for coming on from Bonefish and Tarpon Trust, Brandon Cobb, FLW Pro, for coming on and giving us his Forest Dell Wood Cup recap, Rod Goodall with Riley's Catch. I appreciate all of them spending time and coming on to help this show get the message out. Hey, it is outdoors is where it's at. I was going to try to get to a few more things today. Not going to have time. I do want to bring up, you know, there are certain times where technology is good. I know I rail against video games a lot. But if you're an outdoorsman, hunter, there's a couple apps out there you need to check out. Hunt Stand. We had one of the developers of that from Columbia on last year. So Hunt Stand is out there. There's also a new one out there from Powder Hook and the Quality Deer Management Association called the Deer Tracker mobile app. A couple apps you need to check out. I'm going to do some research on the new QDMA one, Powder Hook one. I already know Hunt Stand. Have a review of them here in the next couple weeks. Oh, Chuck. When Chuck Norris falls in water, Chuck Norris doesn't get wet. Water gets Chuck Norrised. Be careful if you're out there in the dove field. Be careful. Make time to get outside. Take the back roads when you can. And don't forget that camera. I'll see you later. Hit me from